This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It's hard. Like, we have equipment failures, you know, to get, you know, if there's like a hole in the carbon, you know, it's very hard to repair. If we need like special parts, proprietary parts, it takes months.
That was André Matias, a two-time Angolan Olympic rower, on the need to draw more attention and resources to African Olympic teams. Details coming up also. A leading U.S. congressman details how the U.S. is rethinking its strategic initiatives in Africa. And the U.N. is calling for a safe pathways of migration amid disasters on dangerous journeys. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, as the United States seeks to counter growing outside influence on the African continent, it is using a unique blend of military strength, aid distribution, and traditional diplomacy. In a wide-ranging interview with VOA's Anthony Labruto, U.S. Representative Michael McCaul, chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee, details how the U.S. is rethinking its strategic initiatives from a legislative perspective.
China, Russia, and other countries have made inroads in Africa in areas such as military operations and infrastructure that the U.S. cannot ignore. United States Congressman and Chair of the Committee on Foreign Affairs, Michael McCaul.
China's been on the continent for quite some time now with their Belt and Road Initiative. And, of course, they're in other parts of the world. They've been very successful, I would say.
While acknowledging its success, McCaul accuses China of manipulating African countries and says conversations he had with some African officials indicate that they are not happy and still prefer the United States.
China's throwing around a significant amount of money, no strings attached other than you get in a debt trap, and then they bring their own workers in. So it doesn't benefit employment in the host country. And then they end up in this, they're over-leveraged, and they get in the debt trap. If you look at the quality of their construction, it's very cheap. Mm-hmm. I think the goal here is to get as I talked to the ambassadors from the various countries in Africa and the leaders, they really do want to work with us over China. And we just need to give them that option and be present.
In order to have a greater impact on the continent, McCaul, leading the Foreign Affairs Committee, recently reauthorized the Development Finance Corporation, or DFC. It has become the main American investor abroad, countering China's Belt and Road Initiative. Under the new legislation, the DFC will now calculate returns on investments made abroad on behalf of the United States government. The U.S. program has invested nearly $10 billion in Africa in healthcare, climate change mitigation, and women's economic empowerment, among other sectors. That number is dwarfed, though, by China's investment of $21.7 billion. But McCaul notes that strings attached by Beijing can be painful.
When you have economic ties, that strengthens our alliances. And that's where I think the DFC can be helpful. And then, of course, USAID, you know, we provide our humanitarian assistance. I passed the branding bill, which requires the American flag be on this so that they know where it's coming from, because prior to that, they didn't.
In West Africa, particularly in Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso, anti-foreign sentiments were expressed with the ouster of French and U.S. troops. McCaul says heightened tensions there have complicated U.S. efforts.
I think it's problematic. The Sahel has always been fragile, but it's particularly fragile today where, you know, you saw with the coup in Niger, our military are pulling out altogether.
McCaul says he's very worried about the influence of Russia's Wagner Group and its successor, the Africa Corps, which are filling gaps left by the U.S. and French military departures. He says the absence of U.S. troops in West Africa affects more than just the region. In a recent statement to the U.S. Congress, General Michael Langley, head of AFRICOM, details how the departure of U.S. troops from the region opens up additional security risks.
We're seeing a very dangerous impact coming out of Afghanistan right now with all the ISIS. We always have to be mindful of that any of these terror operations, if that's where the direction they want to go.
McCaul acknowledges that repairing the broken relationships will still take work. many of the West African countries consider the U.S. to be too close to their former colonial ruler, France.
They're overstretched and overburdened, but I mean, that's where that's their role in coordinating with state and USAID is to provide that security piece. So their CT operations are very important. But when you have Niger kicking us out, there's nothing we can do. We can't operate within country. And, you know, they kicked the French out of Mali. You know, they have this anti-colonialism attitude that goes back to the French. And I understand that. And they probably look at us in some respects. We want them to look at us as a liberator, not an occupier.
According to U.S. and Nigerian officials, U.S. troops stationed in Niger are scheduled to fully depart from the country ahead of the September 15th deadline set by the ruling military junta. Anthony Labruto, VOA News, Washington.
African sports commentators say they are expecting elite performances and medals from athletes who are representing the continent at the 2024 Olympic Games that officially opens today in Paris. VOA's Mike Hovey has more.
Over 10,000 athletes, including those from Africa's 54 countries, are scheduled to participate in the official opening of the 2024 Paris Olympics. A statement by the American network, NBC News, the event's official international broadcaster, says this year's competition will be historic because the opening ceremony will not take place in a stadium. Instead, athletes will arrive via boat and cruise down the Seine River, passing by historic Paris landmarks, including the Notre Dame de Paris Cathedral. Pundits and betting outlets favor nations like the United States and Jamaica, who have dominated several fields. However, Africa's representatives say they differ. Among them is Andre Matias, a two-time Angolan Olympic rower.
Africa has won, you know, Olympic medals and will continue to win.
Matias says it's important that Africa put up high-ranking performances that will help the continent draw more attention and resources to boost sport on the continent.
I know the reality back home. Right? It's hard. Like, we have equipment failures, you know, to get, you know, if there's like a hole in the carbon, you know, it's very hard to repair. If we need like special parts, proprietary parts, it takes months. So there's big challenges.
Despite the challenges African athletes face with poor training infrastructure and limited resources, the continent still produces medal-winning athletes, including South African swimmer Chad Leclerc, who has 1 gold and 3 silver. Botswana's Letsile Tebogo and Kenya's Ferdinand Omanyala are also listed among athletes who could win medals in the 100-meter and 200-meter races against American Noah Lyles, the favorite to win gold in both events. Makanaka Ishecharamba, a Zimbabwean runner who will compete in Paris, says Africa was historically known for its dominance in long-distance running, but expressed confidence that the continent's runners will also win medals in the 100-meter and 200-meter races.
Back then, people used to just know Africa for distance races because we had countries like Uganda, countries like Kenya. Now we have other countries on the southern side like Zimbabwe, South Africa, Botswana. Then we also look at countries like Nigeria and Uganda producing sprinters. So I'll probably say Africa, we're on the rise, and in a few, we'll probably have a chance of getting a couple medals as a continent.
The Olympics will feature a range of events, including track and field, basketball, rugby, and football. In the Rugby Sevens Olympics that started earlier this week, some African teams already crashed out, while others advanced to the quarterfinals. Kenya, who lost to Argentina, Australia, and Samoa, saw themselves exiting the tournament on Thursday, while South Africa's Blitzbocker advanced to the next stage after defeating Japan and New Zealand. The Football Olympics also started before the official opening. Morocco opened their campaign with a 2-1 victory over Argentina. In the Women's Olympics, Nigeria's Super Falcons lost 1-0 to Brazil, and Zambia lost 3-0 to the U.S. women's national team. Mike Ove, VOA News, Washington.
And in more Africa-centered Olympics, two-time Olympic men's marathon champion Eliud Kipchoge from Kenya will be chasing history as he attempts to become the first man to win 3 Olympic gold medals in the iconic endurance event. Kipchoge will also become the first Kenyan to make 5 appearances at the Olympics. The 39-year-old has enjoyed a long and decorated career. He made his breakthrough way back in 2003 when he won a gold medal in the men's 5000 event at the World Championships in Paris. He later claimed the Olympic title twice, in Rio de Janeiro 2016 and Tokyo 2020, and is now looking to defend his title in Paris, a place where he holds fond memories given his past success there. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, is calling for safe pathways of migration to prevent refugees, asylum seekers, and economic migrants from embarking on dangerous journeys. This urgent call follows the tragic shipwreck of Mauritania this week. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Latest reports put the number of dead at 25, a figure that is sure to rise. Aid agencies report the Mauritanian Coast Guard has rescued 120 of the approximately 300 people believed to have been on the vessel when it departed from Gambia July 15th. Around 165 people remain missing. The UN Refugee Agency reports the vessel, which was following the dangerous West Atlantic route, capsized near the capital Nouakchott. UNHCR spokesperson Shabia Mantou says this is the second deadly shipwreck in the region this month. That disaster, which occurred July 5th, killed at least 89 migrants and refugees, with dozens still missing.
These very tragic incidents underscore the extreme perils faced by desperate individuals who resort to risky sea journeys in the absence of safer pathways. And these are done for reasons to reunite with family, to seek better opportunities, or to escape extreme violence, human rights violations, and dire conditions in their home countries.
The West Atlantic route is considered one of the deadliest in the world. The UNHCR reports thousands of migrants and refugees have drowned in recent years after departing the coast of West Africa for Spain's Canary Islands. The International Organization for Migration reports at least 1,950 migrants died on that route last year, making it the second deadliest year on record. Most of the people on board the ship that capsized July 22nd came from Gambia and Senegal, comprising what the UNHCR calls a mixed movement of both refugees and migrants. Mantou says the mixed nature of movements in the West African and Sahel regions reflects a deterioration in the economic and security situation in various countries in the region.
But in the case of these mixed movements in general, we do see a phenomenon of these movements being taken by people who are extremely vulnerable, their desperation and vulnerability sometimes exploited by smugglers, by traffickers, by others. It speaks to the desperation, and people are resorting to these journeys because there are simply what they perceive to be no safer pathways.
The UNHCR is advocating for initiatives that prevent and offer alternatives to these dangerous onward movements by sea. These include enhancing protective measures, greater solidarity and support for those countries where most refugees and migrants arrive, improved access to safe and legal pathways for resettlement, and holding accountable perpetrators of crimes against refugees and migrants. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. The Central African Republic's main opposition leader, Anicet Giorgis Dologuili, says he will disrupt the country's first local elections in 36 years if the 2023 constitution and electoral laws that he says favor President Faustin Archange Touadéra's party are not immediately revised. Rebel groups are also threatening to disrupt the polls, which the government insists will be transparent and will help restore peace and stability to the troubled state. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Cameroon.
And he says Georges Dologuili says Central African Republic leaders are not showing any signs they want to organize free and fair elections to end a wave of fighting that has engulfed the Central African states for more than a decade. The leader of the Union for Central African Republic Renewal Party, or URCA, spoke in the capital Bangui on Thursday during a press conference to mark his party's 10th anniversary. Dologuili, a former prime minister, said his party will not take part in the October 2024 local elections which he accused CAR President Faustin Archange Kanji Touadéra of preparing to rig to favor his party, the United Arts Movement, or MCU.
Dans la nouvelle constitution, le conseil
he says it is undemocratic and unethical for President Touadéra to single-handedly appoint 6 of the 11 members of the country's elections management body, the National Elections Authority, or ANE. Dologele says the ANE cannot be seen as credible and transparent when a majority of its members are either loyalists or sympathize with Touadéra. The URCA party also protests rules that bar people with double nationality from running for office. That would ban Dologele himself, who reportedly has citizenship in another unidentified country. Dologele says Touadéra ordered his government to bar CAR civilians who have acquired double nationality in other countries because he knows a lot of politicians who fled from the CAR who are very popular and can beat Touadéra and his party in all elections. Dologele said if constitutional reforms are not carried out and if the ANE is not made an independent elections management body, his party will disrupt the October local elections, though he did not say how. However, CAR government spokesperson Maxime Balalu told State TV on Friday that the elections will go forward.
Le gouvernement continue à sensibiliser la population.
Balalu says President Touadéra has instructed his government to ignore opposition threats and continue educating people that the October 2024 local elections will mark a return to democracy and governance, and civilians will be able to participate in local development. Over 2,000 seats in 180 local councils will be at stake in the October polls. The elected councillors will then elect mayors for each of the 180 districts. Security remains fragile as the elections draw near, as rebels and armed groups loot communities for survival, raping women and girls, and creating chaos in towns and villages across the country, according to opposition groups. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Who will she pick? That's the big political question in America after President Joe Biden dropped his re-election bid and Vice President Kamala Harris became the likely Democratic nominee. The selection in question is Harris's running mate against Republican Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. VOA Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman is at the White House and has this report.
So hear me when I say, I know Donald Trump's type.
Kamala Harris, for the time being, campaigning solo for president. Among those under consideration to join her as the party's vice presidential candidate are a bunch of governors, including Roy Cooper of North Carolina, a Democrat who won twice when his state chose Republican Donald Trump for president, and Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania, which both parties consider a must-win state in November. Then there's an astronaut who became a U.S. senator, Arizona's Mark Kelly. With the Democratic National Convention just weeks away, it will be a rushed process, notes Brookings Institution senior fellow William Galston.
The danger of an accelerated process is that things will be overlooked, mistakes will be made that a more leisurely process would have prevented. But she has no choice. She has to do it fast and get it right.
There's no science to getting it right. It's about selecting someone who can attract the most votes, especially in the handful of swing states likely to determine the outcome.
Ready, get set, go.
Ready, go.
That may mean focusing on geography rather than personality. Jay Chen is a Democratic Party delegate and political activist in California.
I think someone from the Midwest or even from the South would be a good choice. Andy Beshear, he's a governor from Kentucky. I think he would make a good choice. We want to make sure that we're balancing out the ticket because we have someone from California.
That someone from California is Kamala Harris. And since political considerations rule out the presidential and vice presidential candidates coming from the same state, that rules out Governor Gavin Newsom, widely expected to be a presidential candidate in a future election. What about two women on the ticket? Gretchen Whitmer is governor of the important swing state of Michigan, but does not appear keen to make history that way.
I am not leaving Michigan. I'm proud to be the governor of Michigan. I've been consistent. I know everyone is always suspicious and asking this question over and over again. I know you're doing your job. I'm not going anywhere.
Popularity as a governor or success in Congress does not guarantee making a big splash as a running mate, notes the author of two books about the vice presidency, Joel K. Goldstein.
Are they ready to shine on the national stage, which is quite different than running in one state or one district?
The second in command is also ideally someone voters will be comfortable with, just a heartbeat away from the presidency. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
Former President Barack Obama and wife Michelle today became the latest to endorse Vice President Kamala Harris for her run for the presidency. Morocco's health ministry says a heat wave in Morocco has killed at least 21 people in a 24-hour period in the central city of Benin Malal. The French news agency AFP reports that the meteorology department says soaring temperatures affected much of the northern African country from Monday to Wednesday, reaching 48 degrees Celsius, 118 degrees Fahrenheit in some areas before easing slightly yesterday. A statement by health officials says most of the deaths in Ben Malal, more than 2,000 kilometers southeast of Casablanca, involved the elderly and people suffering from chronic illnesses. Morocco's rising temperatures and prolonged drought, which has lowered reservoir levels, are a threat to the vital farm sector. Official figures show that around 159,000 jobs in the agricultural sector have disappeared. President Bola Ahmed Tinubu and Nigeria's armed forces have warned against violence in protests planned for next week over soaring living costs, with the military saying it would head off any anarchy. The French news agency AFP reports that social media calls are calling for demonstrations from August 1st. It is not clear who is behind the calls or whether people will take part at a time when many Nigerians are wary of losing work and cautious over past crackdowns. Tinubu touched on the concerns late yesterday, saying, "We are not afraid of protests." Defense spokesman Major General Edward Buba told reporters that while citizens have the right to peaceful protests, they do not have the right to mobilize for anarchy and unleash terror. He said that the armed forces had detected some elements bent on hijacking the planned protests. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Cedric Franklin, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.